thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to yet another edition of the Computer Corner. We made it through the traffic. Actually, there's no traffic today.
It was pretty nice today.
Thank you, Department of Transportation, or whoever it is that controls road closures this weekend. It was beautiful. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous, unbelievable 78 degrees here in the Great Southwest. Wherever you happen to be listening to us, be it here in the Phoenix metro area or throughout the country, the world, guys in Scotland and New Zealand and wherever else that they've called in from time to time. We thank you for joining us. It is the Computer Corner. We are the Data Doctors, as we have done for, these past 12, 14, I don't even remember, I've lost count, 14, 15 years.
Long time.
Yeah, long time. Come in on Saturdays, talk about technology, answer a few questions, make you aware of some things that are going on in the world, and share some knowledge with you, have a little fun, a little lunch, and then go on and enjoy the rest of our Saturday. So we thank you for joining us. 602-277-5827, that's the Rusty Wire version of the communication channel. It's a telephone line.
Yeah.
Rusty Wire, copper. It's the same copper wire that was originally used when the very first telephone was created. That's how archaic telephone lines are.
That predates me a little bit.
Just a tad. 602-277-5827, Rusty Wire. Call in about any kind of question you have. Doesn't really matter. If you're online, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. And you'll see today's theme. We're celebrating the 40th birthday, or the 40 years of the Internet. And we'll talk about what exactly constitutes the beginning of the Internet. It's of course, just like with everything technology-based, there's an argument going on as to what really constitutes the birthday of the Internet, but we'll go through some of
that. That's when Al Gore invented it, right?
No, he didn't come along until quite a ways later. While you're at our website, datadoctors.com/radio, on the right-hand side, there's a couple of things that you may want to consider. One, all of the social media interfaces that are most common for you to engage with us, Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. And then just below that, there's a feedback section where you can ask a question. So if you don't want to wait on hold, whatever it is that fills the void for you, you can call, you can email, or you can just listen. Again, 602-277-5827. So the Internet is celebrating, or we are in the technology world celebrating 40 years of what is now called the Internet, what was called originally the ARPANET. It's a government-funded networking system to initially connect universities. And so September 12th, 1969 was when the first actual connection was made between UCLA and I can't remember the other school, but a couple of different schools where they actually tied those two remote computers together across this new communication channel. On October 29th, the first actual message. So this is where everybody really says this is the birth of the Internet, because this is when the Internet uttered its first words.
L-O.
L-O. You know why it was L-O?
I don't know.
Because
proximity on the keyboard, I guess.
L-O. They're going, wow, what kind of encrypted message was that? L-O. Why would the first message be L-O?
I would put my name and then is amazing. So that goes down in history.
Right. But. Here's what happened. They went to type in login, right? Because they wanted to log into the remote system. So they sent the L-O and the system crashed.
Awesome.
So the very first attempt to try to get an email across, to try to get electronic messaging across, crashed the system. That's why it's L-O instead of anything meaningful.
Useful. Yeah.
But that happened on October 29th, 1969, and that's kind of what we're celebrating. This that just happened a couple days ago, so we're going to call that the 40th birthday, and so we're going to look back at that. I've had the great pleasure of being around this thing since its very early days in the public realm, when it transitioned from the ARPANET to the actual internet and some of those things. If you're really into that history and that kind of cool stuff, that's what all the links on today's show are all about, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see the discussion or the little information about the ARPANET. There's actually there's an image of the first little recorded message. I mean, all the documentation they did on a little pad that they wrote down. Somebody scanned that in.
Hmm.
Which, if that really thrills you, I guess that's nerd alert. But I put it up there. As well as the information about how Al Gore did play a role in helping evolve what we now hold as the internet.
So it wasn't total.
Well,
total
I wouldn't say that he's the father of the internet, as some have purported. I would say that he was very instrumental from a legislative standpoint.
He was a big futurist in
yes.
in the Senate,
and
at the
he
time.
Was in. He was, you know, one of the few people in. The government that actually had some sense of technology. He's been around computers a long time. So he's a smart guy. Kind of saw the future. And today we have 1.668 billion people on the internet. That is the latest statistics on the internet usage stats for the world. 1.6 billion people now connected. Everyone literally connected to everyone else. The 6 degrees of separation, the internet has made it one for 1.6 billion of us. Kind of mind-boggling, huh?
That is pretty nuts.
So, and that 1.6 billion constitutes just under 25% of the world's population. So, that this much has changed in this short period of time. And only 25% of the world is participating as of today. It's kind of mind-boggling when you really think about it. And we're going to talk some more about how unsettling the internet has become and how it has really changed a lot of industries and a lot of what goes on in the world out there. The buggy whip syndrome is being applied to traditional business models that, you know, up until the internet were very viable. Post-internet, they're like buggy whips. And that's kind of odd. 602-277-5827. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Rob. He's got a problem with a digital camera. I love digital cameras. In fact, I'm thinking about doing my next CNN segment on how to actually use a digital camera properly. The flash thing, you know, how people don't use it enough or use it too much.
Well, there's a lot of features on there. A lot of people don't
yeah.
understand
what's
to use.
What's the M? What's the
topic.
P? What's the whatever?
Yeah, what's this running guy? I don't get it.
Dun, 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 dun. It's the running man. We are the Data Doctors. This is the Computer Corner. Happy Halloween to everybody out there. And, of course, join us, won't you, in celebrating the 40th anniversary of the birth of the internet, if you will. The internet is 40 this week. Think about that. Chime in on how it's changed your life. 602-277-5827. Back right after this. Happy birthday, Internet! Thanks for being there. Thanks for being our pal. It's the Computer Corner. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the utterance of the first two characters on what was the ARPANET back then, predecessor to the Internet. If you're into that kind of detail and history, we've posted lots of links for you, datadoctors.com/radio. One of my favorites is the Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive project that's out there.
Yeah, I've tooled around in there a little bit.
The furthest back I could find a Data Doctors website, there's one from 1997.
Most of the websites on there go back to about 96.
Yeah, I think that's when the project started. I think the project started in 95. And so that's a website where you can literally put in the address of any your website, your company's website, Microsoft's website, and this project has been archiving screenshots and capturing the pages of these websites on a regular basis since like the 95, 96. Not every site is there, not every month is there. Not sure exactly what they use as a protocol for deciding what gets saved, what doesn't. But you can go back and see a very, very early version of the Data Doctor's website. And back then, we were proclaiming we had three locations in the greater Furnace area.
It was real nice. There was like blinking
I know.
Images.
We used what they called, what you still call on the internet, dancing baloney.
Yeah.
Yucky, yucky. 602-277-5827 is the number for you to call, like Rob called, who has a digital camera. Sounds like a nice set of digital cameras and a perplexing question. But before we answer your question and get into your situation, Rob, tell me, how long have you been, have you been on the internet since your early computer days? Were you a computer user pre-internet? Tell me how the internet's kind of changed the way you do things.
Oh, geez. Personal or professional?
Either.
I guess the biggest way is it's just, it's like having the largest library in the world in my house and available to me at any day or time. Obviously, that's just from, that kind of data perspective then. And then you get into, the whole music aspect and now video. I mean, do you start and where do you end?
Yeah, well, to your point, if you think back, how many times in pre-internet life did we run into a factoid, a name, something where you're going, I wonder what that means, or I wonder who that was, or what? And all you could do was wonder.
Correct.
Today, you pick up your cell phone, you pop onto a computer, whatever it is you're trying to remember, think about. I mean, if you've got, 30 seconds, you can go figure it out. That's just unbelievable. I'm remembering back to the early days of our service business, and somebody would come in with a computer problem, and they had a problem with their printer, and they didn't have their printer drivers, the software that came with the printer. So the process was, we would say, okay, leave everything here. We would call Hewlett-Packard, for instance, so wait on hold for whatever, and of course it wasn't a toll-free line. We'd finally get to somebody and say, okay, here's the model number of the printer we have. We need printer drivers for it. They go, okay. We'll mail those to you. You'll get them in the next 2 weeks. Could you imagine Kevin today saying, Mr. Customer, we'll take care of this printer problem for you. You'll have to come back in 3 weeks.
That would be
done.
We'd probably get punched, but.
Over. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. So you've got these cool SLR cameras, one you own and one you borrowed. Is that how that works?
Correct.
And so you're obviously a photographer extraordinaire.
I guess.
Okay. You're more of a photographer than the average bear.
Correct.
And just for the people that are out there, I use this term, and we have a rule on the show, SLR. That's a abbreviation for something.
Single lens reflex.
See, I knew this guy was a camera nerd. SLR is basically for the uninitiated, those are the cameras where you can actually change the big old lens. It's like the old style cameras where you can change the lens. And I tell you what, if you're into photography and you have a digital camera and you don't have an SLR, put that on your wish list because it changes everything, doesn't it, Rob?
Yeah, most definitely, especially a newer one, as I'm finding out.
Yes. Okay, so you have your own and you borrowed one. What's the dilemma that came up as a result of this?
Well, I'm using same flash cards. And then I've got a hard drive that I've loaded everything to in the field because I don't have a laptop with me, so I can save my data and my images until I get back home. And as the trip progressed, later in the trip, I wasn't able to save from the cards to the hard drive. And I didn't have any idea why that happened because I never had a problem when I just used the one SLR prior. And then when I got home, I started saving from my flash cards to my hard drive on my PC and from my portable hard drive to my PC, I realized that a lot of the folders had duplicate names, and I'm assuming that's because one came out of one camera and one came out of another.
Correct. That doesn't happen that often, but if you have identical brands and along the same line, so what you have to do is either rename the folders on the camera card before you copy, or tell your computer to copy it to a completely different folder. The target destination has to be different so that those naming issues don't come into play. And all it takes is just creating one folder that says version 2 or whatever.
The EXIF information in the images doesn't differentiate itself, so the...
No, I mean, because all the Windows is looking at is the actual file name. So I'm going to put you on hold here because I don't want to cut you off here, but we are going to break. It's a hard break. It's not that hard. It's the Computer Corner of the Data Doctors, celebrating 40 years of the internet. What has the internet done for you, either lately or altogether? Call us, let us know. Back after this. Happy Halloween, happy birthday, internet. Happy, happy, joy, joy. The weather in the great Southwest here is fantastic. It's the time of year where my old Camaro convertible with those black vinyl seats, you get that just slight little warmth from the sun, right?
Oh,
and
perfect.
It's just slightly cool outside. It's like, this is why I live in Arizona.
You know, it dumped about 2 feet of snow in Colorado this past week.
Yeah, it's kind of ugly in a lot of places out there.
And we've been complaining about 65 highs while they're probably...
Excuse me, the other morning I went out to walk, it was 39 degrees.
That's pretty.
It was...
chilly for us, but to them, they're just seething.
It's just my ears.
Yeah.
We are celebrating the fact that the internet has been around for so long, 40 years. Yeah, not really. Not the internet. The ARPANET. The beginnings of. So the first cell split from the birth of the ARPANET was in 1969. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, check that out. There is an issue with IP addresses. Everybody out there has seen these crazy numbers like 206.192. It's four sets of three numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is the internet protocol address. Okay? It's kind of like the problem we've had in multiple areas here in the United States where we had to get more zip codes or more area codes because we ran out of phone numbers. Because if you just do the simple math, right, you're going to run out of phone numbers at some point because there's only X number of phone numbers with the area code of 602, for instance. The same thing is happening on the internet. There are so many things connecting to the internet. Every device that connects to the internet has to have its own IP address, and it's unique.
So there's running out of numbers things getting pretty popular. I mean, you have the phone numbers, then you got Y2K because there's only two and not four.
Right.
And now you've got this.
Yeah, so they're going to have to go to IPv6. Right now it's IPv4, meaning that there's four sets of three numbers. They want to expand it to six because they're estimating we have about less than 700 days left, just less than 2 years, before, you know, based on the current consumption rate of new IP addresses, we're going to run out of addresses because so many people and so many devices are on the internet.
Well, I mean, but with the current version, it allows for like 4 billion different combinations. And then the next ones.
Yeah, but if 1.6 billion people are on the internet and each of them has two devices, three devices, which is not the case for most of us.
That's a good point.
So anyway, that's on there again if you want to check all that out. Let's go back to the phones here. Lines are booked, so as soon as you hear somebody hang up, you can call in. Carol, welcome to the Computer Corner. How has the internet changed your life?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know if I could put that into words. It's opened up lots of information for me.
Can you recall the aha moment for you when you actually got it, when you actually realized this isn't some nerdy tool, this thing is life-changing? Remember how far back that was?
Actually, probably not as far as most people. I'm still kind of a new user, only about 5 years.
But I'm saying you got that this thing is so amazingly powerful.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so much more to learn yet. It's going to take many years.
I still remember all of the business people that I was talking to in the early days of the internet where I was saying, you really do need to think about getting a website. And they're like, website? That's for those crazy kids and the nerds. And email? I don't need it. I got a fax machine. How much things have changed in the last 10, 15 years. Anyway, you're suffering from the BSOD, right?
If that means no bootable devices, yes, sir.
Oh, I thought it says here on the screen, blue screen of death.
Yeah, you're right. When I booted my computer up the last two mornings in a row, I've gotten the BSOD.
I hate when that happens.
Me too.
Now, when did this start? Just the last couple days?
Yes, yesterday morning when I booted.
Anything you can think of that changed 3 days ago? Any new updates? Any new hardware? Any changes? You have a power outage? Did Did you spill a big Coke on the thing? So, can you think of anything?
Off the top of my head, absolutely nothing.
Okay. So, you know, and that's the way these computer things work, right, Kevin? They work until they don't.
Exactly.
Most of the times, there's a catalyst. 50% of the time, you have no idea what the catalyst is, and that's where the discovery process starts for us computer guys. The blue screen that you're getting, you get a bunch of gibberish on, correct?
I wrote down, actually, this morning what it said.
Okay, let's have it.
It said, no bootable devices.
Oh.
Strike F1 to retry boot.
Oh.
F2 for setup utility. Press F5 to run onboard diagnostics.
Do you know what a bootable device is?
I could say no.
Okay. So in the computer world, when you hear boot up, it's basically the startup, right?
Right.
In order for, so you have the hardware, so you apply power to the hardware, the hardware starts up, and you see all these little signs flashing Intel and all this other stuff. Once all the hardware has you know, the roll call has been placed, then the first thing it does is it goes out and looks for a boot device, which means, okay, Mr. Hard Drive or whatever it is that you're booting off of. It could be a CD-ROM, could be whatever. What's the computer code you're going to give me? So with a Mac, it's the Mac OS X, right? It's their operating system. You're going to boot to that. So what this error message is implying is it doesn't see anything to hand the thing off to start up. It's not seeing your hard drive.
I can tell you that I was able to hit escape.
Yes.
To exit the blue screen.
Yes.
And then the computer came up and is running normal.
Oh, okay.
But
well, then let's
2 days in a row it's done this.
But let's,
that's why I'm concerned.
Are you in front of your machine by any chance?
I can be.
Let's do a little test here.
Oh, that would be just fabulous.
Do you know where that little button is to get your cup holder open?
To get your cup holder open?
Oh, I'm sorry, the CD-ROM drive. CD-DVD.
Off of start in my computer?
No. The physical button on the front of the computer. Where if you're going to put a disc in, you hit the button and the tray comes out.
Oh, sure.
Do that for me. Hit that button. Go, right. Carol. Go, Carol.
There. Okay, she's out.
Is there anything in there?
No, there is not.
Okay, that's good. Because if you had a disc in there, depending upon how your computer was set up, it might have tried to be in starting off that disc, and then when you hit escape, it says, okay, I'll go on to something else. Do you have any kind of USB devices plugged in, whether it's a printer, a card reader, anything like that?
I do have a wireless mouse plugged in.
Just the wireless mouse? No storage devices, no printers, no...
Yesterday, but not before I had the problem. Yesterday, late morning, I did plug in a flash drive.
Okay, because flash drives plugged in when you start your machine can cause this sometimes as well.
This was not plugged in at at startup.
Do you have a floppy disk drive still?
No.
You don't even have one on that machine?
I don't believe so. I think this is an 05 model.
Okay, well, it may still have a floppy disk. It may not. I don't know.
That shows my ignorance of computers. I don't know, and I don't think so.
A little disk, okay. But generally speaking, something has changed in your computer's configuration. The computer's trying to start up off of what it thinks is the default start device and cannot. And so when you're hitting escape, it's going to the second thing on the list, which is your hard drive. The good news is you didn't lose everything.
No.
So it sounds like it's a fairly minor issue that once you identify what it is that the computer thinks it's trying to start up off of, you'll be able to fix this fairly quickly. So double check that there's nothing else plugged into any of the USB ports. And if there is something plugged in, turn it all off. For giggles, if you want to try unplugging your mouse and then booting up and seeing if it boots up properly, I mean, you can check to see those things. Generally speaking, an external wireless mouse won't cause this problem.
Okay.
But that's essentially, you know, again, based on not being able to see the machine and just based on what you're saying. Something in there, something that will be obvious once you find it, is causing your machine to try to start off the wrong device. That's why it's saying no bootable device.
So good news is it's maybe not ready to croak.
Well, no, that's not necessarily the case at all. It could be that the thing is going to croak tomorrow. So I would suggest very highly that you be paranoid and assume that this is going to crash tomorrow.
Okay.
And if you're going to assume that this is going to crash tomorrow, this is a big test now, Carol. What would you do the very next thing that you would do before doing anything else?
Continue learning to back up all my information.
That is correct. Ding, 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 ding. We've got another winner. I can't tell you the number of times that people come to our data recovery labs going, you know, it was acting goofy. I got it to run. I thought, you know, I'll do this later. You don't know. Hard drives run until they crash. And there are only two kinds of hard drives out there, those that have crashed and those that are going to crash. I think we know which one you have.
Yes.
Right? It's going to crash.
That's what it seems like to me.
Don't know if it's going to do it tomorrow or 2 years from now. Take this opportunity to get, I can't tell you, it's so much cheaper to do it now than to have to bring it to my lab after it's crashed and it's physically failing.
Am I better off not to shut it off at all until I get everything configured on my...
I would highly recommend you do exactly that.
Okay.
Do not turn it off until you know you've got everything you care about copied off somehow, somewhere. Whether you do an online backup system, an external hard drive, burn it to CDs, DVDs, whatever, it doesn't really matter how you do it, whatever you're comfortable doing, but you've been given a second chance, don't waste it. And more importantly, all y'all listen out there that you're in this situation like Carol's in, whether you've been in that situation and you understand what we're talking about, or you're going to be, or you're in the same situation as Carol, please do not forget that. We'd love to see you at our data recovery labs, but I'm going to tell you right now, you ain't going to like the price.
Okay.
So here's how you put me out of the data recovery business. If everyone backed up, I'd never have to do another data recovery ever again. Of course, I've been saying that for 20 years and nobody's listening.
Can I ask you one more question?
Absolutely. Sure.
As far as data recovery, I'm relatively new to this. I did back up all my pictures yesterday. I mean, everything on there, I guess I have to back up individually, kind of?
Well, if you don't have a backup system or program or piece of software...
No, I do not.
Then, and you may have one built into the version of Windows you're running. There's all different ways to back up. There are great online backup systems now that if you've got a high-speed internet connection, you can get everything pushed up to an external secured internet server, right? That's only yours. I mean, the data is only accessible by you because it's all encrypted and scrambled, and you're the only one that has the passcode.
That's way beyond my capabilities, I think, at this point.
Actually, no. It's probably one of the easiest things you can do. You can just go to one of the Mosey and Carbonite are the top two consumer-level online backups.
Mosey
or Carbonite? M-O-Z-Y or Carbonite, Carbonite.
Uh-huh.
We use Carbonite in our business with our customers.
And that's an online, I can Google that?
Carbonite, or just type carbonite.com, and you can go and look to see, you know, what it takes to get that set up and the different fees and what have you. Truly, if you don't know what you're doing, get with somebody that can help you understand who Carol is, what Carol needs to back up, and what Carol is capable of doing. And matching that backup system to you. So if you know, that's something we can help you with in any of our stores. I'm going to put you on hold here. Kind of got off the blue screen of death thing, but folks, don't put yourself in this position. It is the Computer Corner. The Data Doctors will be back right after this. Oh, my goodness. I'm getting spring fever, and it's fall.
It's gorgeous outside.
It is.
Up to 80 now.
Sorry, we keep talking about this. You got to remember, folks, we went through the 110-degree, 30-some-odd days of 110 degrees, and people are making fun of, I don't know, why do you live in Arizona? Well, guess what? This is why we live in Arizona. 602-277-5827. We are somewhat celebrating the wonderful internet and the 40th anniversary of the first utterance across two computers on what was the ARPANET. Here's an astonishing, by the way, 602-277-5827. We've got another hour to go. If you got a question, get in the queue. We'll see if we can help you either on or off the line. Actually, before I go into my astonishing information, let's talk to John, who's equally as astonishing. John, you have something to... contribute to the discussion about the 40th anniversary?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of strange. I was replying to an email that I got probably in around March, and all of a sudden it popped up, had a less than sign, I believe it was number 5, and then a greater than sign, and the date and the time stamp was 5 p.m. December 31st, 1969. I just kind of sat there for a while and looked at it, and it was like, and then I deleted out after that. I thought I should go ahead and emailed back into time. Whatever
yes.
that was.
Yes. Wow.
But yeah, it was kind of bizarre.
You don't.
It had to be somewhere. You know, it was 1969, December 31st.
And you don't have like a bunch of model airplanes in your house. You haven't been working with that glue a lot.
No, I got more bizarre stories than that.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, actually, the date and timestamp. I mean, that's you can actually change the date and time of your computer on the fly. Now, whether it's going to pass through now to get an email stamp that way, that would almost have to suggest that somebody's email server was set up that way.
Yeah, like from the very start, because you figure they probably only used simple characters when they started it. So a greater or a less than sign, a five.
Yeah, but you said you just got this in March, right?
Yeah.
So that's probably somebody just having fun with you.
Yeah, it just came out of the blue. I mean, there wasn't anybody to really be messing with me, but just came out of the blue. So.
And you didn't reply?
No, I thought somebody was messing with me.
Yeah, probably.
Afterwards, I figured, I should have. That would have been neat to send it back to 1969.
You could have, yeah, it could have been
one
of those.
Turned out.
One of those crazy internet movies.
It's not the strangest thing that's ever happened to me.
All right, John. Well, okay. I appreciate you chiming in. Okay. 69. What I was going to get to here before we go to this next break, Wanda Travis, please hang tight. 602-277-5827. If you've got a question or join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. Most people don't realize the real mainstream multimedia, the stuff that really gives us a great experience on the internet, streaming video, streaming audio, high resolution pictures, all that stuff. You know how that all was paid for and developed? Porn.
Really?
Sure. In the very early days of the internet, when they couldn't figure out these things, somebody had to spend the money to figure this out. Well, the only motivated crowd on the internet in the early days, and really up until social media came around, it was probably the leading way to develop these new technologies. The only group of people out there in the early days of the internet were people that were into porn. They were willing to pay for these really, you know, basic images, and then they started doing basic video streaming and the basic audio and...
We'll have to thank Brandon next time we see him.
Why Brandon?
Well, you said it's people who pay for those services.
I see. He's not here to defend himself.
No, not at all.
I see.
Couple of those times I wasn't here and he did that, I figured that was a good chance.
I actually have a link to an article in 2004. I think it was it USA Today or... it was USA Today. And they're specifically talking about... how porn is leading high-tech ways. It's the basically the business model, if you will, that gives that creates a revenue that allows people to continue their R&D and what have you. And it's a it's an interesting footnote, if you will, or whatever note it is, whatever part of the body note it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
602-277-5827, the number. We also have, where is that at? There was a great little question here from Judy. Says, I will need a new computer next year. My husband says I should buy Apple because of all the ads. So, one for the ads for Apple. I say stick with Microsoft PCs. What is your opinion? Inquiring minds want to know. So when we come back, we're going to talk about it's a more compelling question year after year after year. So if I'm going to buy a new computer, should I buy something with Windows? Should I buy it with a Mac OS? Is it time? You decide. We'll talk about that some more on the other side, as well as our weekly newsletter, our Geek Speak of the Week, and a bunch of other goodies when it comes to the 40th anniversary of what we call today the Internet, the intertubes, whatever it is that you refer to it as. Pretty compelling stuff. Hour number two of the Computer Corner coming up. Kevin Church, Ken Colburn, the Data Doctors du jour, 602-277-5827. Get online, see if we can help you.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. It is Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, the data doctor's du jour. Look at me, I'm multitasking.
I saw that. Kind of impressed.
My wife wants to make sure that I got all of her messages. And yes, honey, I got it. Not that she listens to the show.
No.
Been around this too long. It was really interesting 15 years ago. Now,
no, she's got all week to listen to it on datadoctors.com, too.
Yeah, right.
Not going to happen.
We are celebrating the 40th anniversary of what most perceive as the birth of the internet, the ARPANET, in 1969. So join us online, datadoctors.com/radio if you care. But for now, let's go to the Geek Speak of the Week. Every week we try to bring you a morsel, a little nibble of the vernacular of tech. Today's Geek Speak is actually very important for those of you in business. It's actually important for everybody out there that uses Google, too, because they deal with this all the time. This week's Geek Speak of the Week is PPC.
PPC.
And, yeah, no, this is not some grade school joke.
No.
Stands for pay per click. Happen to notice Google stock, even after getting hit by $15, is still at like $536 a share.
That's ridiculous.
Do you know why Google stock is so ridiculously high and valued that high? PPC. Pay per click. That's basically the revenue model that basically blew this thing up. When the guys, Sergey and whatever his name is from the founders of Google, when they actually came up with this search algorithm, it wasn't that they had this whole business model in mind. They wanted a better way for people to search and find information and whatever, right?
Well, the most amazing thing about Google is just how plain and easy it is to get around. And likewise, the ads are exactly the same.
Well, so the way PPC works, pay-per-click, is advertisers will only pay Google or Yahoo or Microsoft. And Google's not the one that came up with pay-per-click. It's just that they adopted it as their revenue model. And that's why there are so many people using Google and so many people advertising on Google and so many people clicking on those ads. That's where all the money is going. This is why newspapers and broadcast television, a lot of traditional advertising channels are being decimated because PPC is so powerful. Pay per click. If you're a business owner and you have a minuscule marketing budget, which most of us small business owners have, I implore you to investigate PPC as a very cost-effective way to get in front of your customers. Because unlike any other kind of advertising that's out there, and I'm not suggesting this be the only advertising you do, certainly not on a radio station that is advertiser-driven. Mm-hmm. But PPC, what that allows you to do is get in front of people that are looking for you right now. They literally type something in that has to do with your business, and then you have an ad, and hopefully what you say in your ad gets them interested enough that they click on it and they learn more about it, and then just try to give you a call, what have you. PPC, it's a good thing to know, whether you're a business owner. And those of you that see the sponsored links on the Google results, right? Those are becoming more relevant. You know, people go, I don't ever click on those ads. You know what? Those ads are becoming more and more relevant. And that all has to do with how Google manages. Not just Google, but Google is the best at managing relevance so that those ads typically do have to do with what you're searching on. Because then a lot of times when you're searching, you are looking for a commercial solution to the problem, right? You're not looking.
It's in their best interest, too. The more people that click, the more they get paid. So if it's closer to whatever they're searching for, the chances of it being clicked go up.
Well, here's where PPC on Google becomes really crazy, because everybody just assumes the highest bidder gets the best placement. No, 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 no. Google is all about relevance. They want to make sure that those ads are relevant, just as relevant as the natural search results and the local search. All the stuff that you get when you type something into Google, Google is absolutely focused on making sure everything is as relevant as possible. So in the PPC world, again, this is where those of you that are looking at this, you need to educate yourself. The PPC world, it doesn't go to the highest bidder. It goes to the most relevant ads. So without getting too confusing, if you have an ad and I have an ad, and your ad is generating a click-through rate of 1%. So 1% of the people that see the ad are actually clicking on it. And mine is generating a 2% click-through rate. So 2% of the people that see the ad are clicking on it. Okay, so my relevance ranking with Google is twice what yours is. And so they look at your bid of a dollar, and I only have to pay 51 cents, and my ad's going to be above yours. Because twice as many people are going to click on my ad. Instead of making a dollar off of you, they made a dollar two off of me.
Hmm.
It's crazy math, but that's one of the ways that they help improve the relevance. And so those of you out there going, oh, I'm just going to click on my competition's ads and cost them money. Well, actually what you're doing is you're increasing their click-through rate. You're increasing, and you're probably helping them get a lower cost per click. So those of you thinking that that's a really good idea, now you know, maybe not so much.
Hmm.
And that's another reason why Google does this, is to keep the competition from doing something like that. They just go on there and they're constantly clicking. Well, you're helping the click-through rate. And they don't allow, I mean, they know after you clicked once, this machine already clicked on this, it doesn't count. So you can't just keep clicking on it over and over again. I mean, it's really sophisticated stuff. Which is why Google stock is 536 even after a $14 drop on Friday. Interesting, wow. Hopefully.
Pretty interesting.
Maybe, maybe not. Let's see here. When we come back, we have Stefan, Ray, Stu, Alan, all kinds of people in one line open, 602-277-5827. We come back, we will address that Apple versus Windows question. It is the Computer Corner of the Data Doctors, back right after this. Happy Halloween, everybody. Happy birthday, Internet. It's past those awkward teen years, and it's into its...
It's cougar-ness.
No. It's pre-cougar.
Puma?
It's in the midlife crisis.
Mm.
And if you believe all the discussion about IP addresses, if we're going to run out of IP addresses, I guess that's an appropriate thing, midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Earlier in the show, we talked about an email that we got asking the question, that most important question, where to go. There it is. Judy was asking, I will need a new computer next year. My husband says I should buy Apple because of all the ads. Not sure that's a reason to buy the Apple, but I say stick with the Microsoft PC. What is your opinion? All right, so there's a question a lot of people have on and on and on. There are pros and cons to both sides. The Mac, obviously, because it is a closed system, kind of like the iPhone and the iTunes Store and all that, they control everything. They're able to make it a more fluid experience because you can't do as many things as you can on a Windows-based PC. And when I say you can't do as many things, I'm talking about the variables that are involved. It's exponential. Let me put a little perspective out there, because I know a lot of people are going, yeah, the Macs are really ruling. On a worldwide basis, right now, the best data we have suggests, that just under 5% of the worldwide installed base of computers that are connected to the Internet, just in and around 5% of those are running a Mac OS of some sort. About 92%, 93%, of that collective body is running some flavor of Windows. And then there's Linux and some of the side. Linux is less than 1%. Here's the perspective. Windows 7 came out when?
Last week on Thursday.
Okay. It's going to probably have more people using it than all the people using a Mac OS in the first month or two of its release.
Yeah.
It was nearly half during the beta testing. 1.5% of the internet was already on Windows 7 before it launched. So 1.5 versus 4.5 or 5%. Okay, now millions of people are starting to adopt it. Okay, and the reason I'm bringing that up is the world, despite Apple's advertising, is still running on Windows. Will for the foreseeable future. And with Windows 7 being as good as it is, it may even you know, kind of level off on what's going on with the Mac. The bottom line is the operating system is really secondary to, Judy, what do you want this thing to do? Because if all you do is surf the internet and write some letters and check the email, either one is going to work just fine. You're going to spend more money on a Mac than you will on a PC. It's just cold, hard facts. It's going to be cheaper to get a Windows-based computer. You're already going to be more familiar with the operating system, which, at the end of the day, the learning curve for the Mac OS is not that steep. So that's not a reason not to migrate to the Mac if that's where you want to go. If you have to interface with your office or others that are on the Windows platform, then you've got to take that into consideration as well. Is this going to be a problem? If you're really into it, you can do what Brandon did, which was get an Intel-based laptop and actually load both operating systems on. You can flip back and forth. There's a solution for every problem out there or every scenario that's out there. You just really got to look at, is what I want to do, if you're self-contained, where you don't really interact with others, then the choice becomes a lot more clear, a lot easier for you to make a decision. It doesn't really matter. If there are others involved, and especially your support mechanism, I think this is where a lot of people forgot about the support side of what goes on when you're in the Windows world. They bought a Mac, and then they started having questions, and they couldn't go to their normal people and say, "Hey, I'm having this problem." They're going, "I can't help you. I don't know. I don't have one of those." Right? So your support system, that's another factor that you want to consider. Who is it that you call when you have a problem? Can they help you with a Mac? Or are you going to be completely on your own or have to work with a vendor or work with the retailer, whoever it is that you purchased it from? So there's no black and white and clear issue on this thing. And if you want to chime in on this thing, if you're somebody that just switched from one to the other, had a good or bad experience going to the Mac, whatever, call in. Let Judy know, 602-277-5827. Here's an interesting call from Stu. Stu, are you asking about viruses from your cell phone?
Well, I send and receive my email through AOL because I have a smartphone for my at-will internet right now. That's all I got. And recently, you go past the welcome page into your emails, and I clicked on 15 bonus free ringtones here, and supposedly... 15 free ringtones.
Yeah.
I entered in my email address and a alternative password because I was suspicious because they were asking for password. And it said invalid password. How would they know that unless they tried to hack my account? And anyway, I didn't qualify for their so-called 15 free ringtones. And 48 hours later, my stock ringtones were erased from my cell phone. I had to take it down to Sprint and get a hard reset.
All right, hang on a second. I didn't realize we were that close to break, but it's an interesting thing that he's asking. I'm going to get a little more detail on that. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about the whole world of malware and cell phones. They can act as a gateway or they can actually be the infecting agent. So we're going to talk some more about that. It is the Computer Corner. Data Doctors are in the house. Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, the lines are all booked up, but join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. Couple lines open, 602-277-5827, because I cleared them during the break there and tried to help folks out. It's the internet's 40th birthday. Be interesting. Anybody else wants to call in and talk about how has the internet changed how you live, work, breathe? Certainly, it's changed the way we accumulate and access information. Somebody referred to the library. When's the last time you actually stepped foot in a library?
It's been years.
It almost seems archaic, doesn't it?
You know what? It's almost been about 4 or 5 years since I've been to a video rental store.
You know, Google got smacked on the nose for trying to create the world's first online library, right? We're scanning every book in there and didn't realize, oh, copyright. Yeah, people want to maintain that. Whoops.
That matters.
Ruh-roh. Let's go back to the phones. Dan, you got something to chime in on the 40th anniversary of the Internet?
Yes, I do, actually. I wanted to say happy birthday to the Internet, of course. I work from home, and I actually use the Internet every single day to work on other people's computers. I'm a break-fix person. What I do is I log into people's computers and fix them through the Internet.
And
I
you get to stay at home, and you get to stay at home in your jammies, and you don't even have to put a baseball cap on.
Right.
And...
you want to talk about life changing?
Yeah,
that's life changing.
Now, how long have you been doing that?
2 years now.
2 years. And what was your first experience with the Internet when the aha moment appeared, when that light went on, like, holy cow, this thing's amazing?
Probably back in the BBS days when I originally got interested in the Internet and downloaded my first game. And, of course, it took 2 or 3 days to download, but I was just like, wow.
Well, you said BBS. Tell everybody what BBS stands for.
Bulletin board system. It's actually, back in the old days, you used to have to take your phone and plug it into a modem. And it was actually the handset plugged into this big, huge device that would transmit and receive
the coupler, right?
Where it was using
the actual sounds. Remember those old sounds we used to
You ever seen there? The movie War Games?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was a screamer, too. It was screaming sounds, and my parents would drive them nuts because they can hear it up through, all through the house.
Yeah, 300 baud.
300 baud. It was great.
Because you were just sending this little tiny trickle of text information across, and this was pre-internet.
Yep.
This was what
was actually a text-based game.
Yes. Well, I mean, the pre-internet, one of the most popular text-based, was it Intervision or whatever, games that was out there. I was actually in the retail software business back then, was a game called The Leather Goddesses of Phobos. And it was completely text-based. And the reason it was so powerful was the game imagery was in your mind. It was almost like when you read a book.
Yep.
It's the fantastic imagery that your mind is able to put together is light years better than movies, right? I mean, you can put together, maybe not yours, Kevin.
Yeah, not mine.
Yeah, I used to play King's Castle, and it was a mud game is what it was called. And basically, it was a bunch of people that created worlds that were text-based. And you went in there, and you were, you know, your muscles were bulging with power and all this kind of stuff, and you'd go in and you'd attack demons and do all that kind of stuff. It was a lot of fun.
It's so archaic, right?
It is.
But,
I look back and I'm like, my goodness.
But
it's
think about it. It sounds archaic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the equivalent between the blockbuster movies, that's the internet today,
yep,
and the simple action of sitting down and reading a book.
Exactly. Or
right?
Listening to the radio.
All right, the same kind of thing where you there's imagery that your mind is kind of putting in there, and that's why those games were. I still think that those games, yeah, it might be a little hard to get my teenagers to consider them, but I think anybody that actually, if you want to take a blast from the past, try to find some of these old text-based games and give them a shot, and you'll be surprised how amazing, how interactive they can actually be. It's pretty cool.
It's a lot of fun.
All right, Dan. Hey, thanks for chiming in.
Not a problem. You guys have a great day.
All right, you too. And it's Dan's take on the Internet. Obviously, we've been providing that remote service, right? If somebody needs help, we can reach in across anywhere on the Internet through the web browser and reach out and touch someone virtually. Or you can use telecommuting in the age of $4 gas. You'll probably see more and more of that where you know, you're actually staying at home and working in a traditional job when it comes to that. 602-277-5827. Let's see if we can help Stefan.
Hey.
Hey there. Hey, when did the Internet light come on for you?
Oh, the Internet light? What do you mean?
You know, when you realized, hey, this Internet thing.
Oh.
It's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I was kind of born, I guess, into the Internet generation. So when I was, like, in elementary school, we started off using it. And I guess, like, the advent of MySpace and Facebook and, you know, all these network sites, kind of like, whoa, you know, I love the Internet.
So let me put some perspective in here. Can you imagine having a set of books. Usually it's 20 to 26 books that basically any question you had about the world, you'd have to go find it in one of these 26 volumes, known as an encyclopedia. I mean, it's, I don't know if you, have you ever actually seen, how old are you?
17.
Okay. So have you actually ever seen a set of encyclopedia set?
Well, like,
you know, like the Britannica and some, I mean, these.
Have you been to a library?
Well, I go to school right near the Burton Barr Library.
So you've seen the outside of the building.
Yeah, I've seen,
that's
I've seen the outside of the building.
That's awesome.
Have I gone inside? No.
Nice.
No. Yeah.
I'm with you, brother.
Probably doesn't know Dewey and his decimal system either then, huh?
No, I've never heard of the guy.
Is that how you deal drugs?
No, listen, I listen, you're not missing a whole lot. But it
I
is.
I understand because you spend like hours and hours at the library searching for something you can find in like 5 minutes on the computer.
Yeah, but we didn't have that. We didn't have that option.
You kids are soft.
And we had like three TV channels, and we had to use a pair of pliers because that little plastic thing.
We had to blow air into Nintendo cartridges for them to work.
Nintendo. There was no Nintendo.
You know how I found out about that?
How?
Talk to people. I didn't have social networking.
That's right. You had to talk face to face and stuff.
Word of mouth. I know.
So you're having a problem with Internet Explorer there?
Well, actually, I'm realizing now it's more like Firefox. But actually, any web browser I have, I use different ones.
Ah, now let's point out why that's a very smart thing. We've talked about this over and over again. Those of you that only have Internet Explorer on your computer, take our advice. Go and install Mozilla's Firefox. Just go to mozilla.com and it's free. It's an alternative browser. Frankly, it's a better browser in my opinion.
Yeah.
Although Internet Explorer is getting better, they're starting to adopt some of these things, some of the performance tweaks and all that stuff are out there. But the cool part about having that on there is that Stefan has already figured out, okay, every browser is having this problem. So you've eliminated any particular browser, right?
Right.
So the reason that's important is if you only have Internet Explorer and you're having a problem, is it the browser or is it your computer or is it the internet connection? Well, the only quick way to know to eliminate the browsers to have an alternate browser like Firefox on there. Try doing the exact same thing with Firefox, and if you get the same result, you know, okay, it's not the browser. Right, and that's what you've come up with, right?
Correct.
So no matter what browser you use, what's happening?
My computer recognizes an internet connection, and I can actually use, like, certain torrent sites like, you know, FrostWire, you know, and I can download stuff, but it just won't let me use, like, I can't log into, like, the iTunes store, or I can't browse the internet.
You can't get out to the www?
No.
The weird wide web? So the first thing, again, without seeing the machine, the first thing that I would start looking at is your security programs.
Okay.
Antivirus, anti-spyware, firewalls,
well,
all those kinds of things?
I took my laptop to Best Buy, and they, you know, ran their secret, you know, virus, you know, scan.
No, I'm not saying that you have a virus.
Oh.
I'm saying that your security software could be what's holding you back. It may have some setting or some situation that it's come up with that has basically locked you down. And so the best way to know that is by disabling them either one at a time or all together. So you know how all the icons for your antivirus and your firewall and everything appear down on the bottom right-hand corner?
Yeah.
Most of the time you can just float your mouse over the top of it so you know which one it is and then right-click on it.
Yeah.
One of the options that comes up generally is either pause, disable, exit, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Get rid of all your security programs, either one at a time or all at once. Then try surfing again, right? Because if it works, then you know, okay, one of these programs is causing the problem. And then you start to activate each one at a time, and you'll figure out which one it is that's kind of holding you back. That would be my best guess just based on your description.
Okay.
Something that controls your computer's ability to go out through, without getting technical, probably port 80. Something's blocking port 80, which is how you get out to the internet, the web.
Mm-hmm.
And your downloads through torrents and what have you are going out through different ports, different than what your web surfing is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's, again, best guess scenario based on what's going on. But I'd try that first. A very common situation. Whose antivirus program are you running?
Wow, actually, it just worked. I'm using Kaspersky.
You just disabled it?
Yeah.
Am I, what do they call those guys, a genius?
The Shaolin of computer
so.
Problems.
I mean, it must be your lack of internet, you know, growing up. That
yeah,
helps you.
See, that's because this is what happens when you spend time in libraries.
All right, well, thank you very much.
No.
I appreciate it.
Actually, Stefan, that only comes in from the fact that this situation... It's not the first time I've heard it.
Oh.
It's probably about the 800th time that I've heard this, because this is, see, security software is becoming so overbearing these days because it has to. And so all it has to do is get into one situation or another where it feels like we got a dangerous situation. It's almost like lockdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody out of the pool. And so that's why you got to go one at a time. So now you got to figure out why Kaspersky is doing that to you.
Yeah.
It's because it's from Russia.
Very true.
Comrade.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Stefan.
All right,
thanks
too.
For calling in. 602-277-5827. We got one segment left. If you want to chime in on how the internet has changed your life, or if you want to reminisce about how you've never gone into a library.
Why would you? You got WoW Wiki or Wiki?
WoW Wiki?
Wikipedia. Sorry, that was another one. Wikipedia.
Or you live in Wikiality, as Stephen Colbert so aptly named it. The reality of whatever wikis say, it becomes reality. Remember how he single-handedly, him and his viewers, saved the African elephant from extinction by going and posting on the wiki for the African elephant that they are no longer endangered and that there's a large enough population. You remember that whole stunt he pulled? That was the point he was trying to make, is there's reality and then there's wikiality.
Yeah.
Right? Because if it's on a wiki, it's true, right?
No.
Well, I think that
was the point.
The point he was making, and I think he did it very well. It is the Computer Corner. Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, back right after this. By the way, if you like what you hear on this radio show and you don't want to have to wait till Saturday at noon, at least here in the great Phoenix, Arizona area, which after today, tomorrow, remember, those of us in Phoenix, we don't do no stinking daylight savings time, but the rest of the world does.
They get an extra hour of sleep.
Well, no, we go from Pacific time to Mountain time,
mm-hmm.
which means if you're in the Pacific range of the world as you listen to us, we're going to start coming on at 11 o'clock your time. And if you're on the East Coast, we're going to start coming on at 2 o'clock instead of 3. It's crazy.
Catching up.
Something like that. We change, unfortunately. That's the one thing about originating from here that everybody else has to adjust.
Arizona does what it wants.
Yeah, we do.
Doesn't care.
Us in some small pocket of Indiana, I think. Anyway, if you like what you hear and you'd like to get more of our information throughout the week, you can sign up for our free newsletter. DataDoctors.com/help is our free help section on the right-hand side as you scroll down. You'll see a place where you can either look at the archives, the last 10 or so editions of our newsletter, and also sign up for it there. B, you can become a Facebook fan, and that's really what we're using now as our early warning system. When we find things during the week that we believe you should be aware of, we don't want to wait till the Friday newsletter. We don't want to wait till the Saturday radio show. Something very important happens on Monday. We have to figure out a way to get that information out. So if you'd like that additional information from us, become a Facebook fan, facebook.com/datadoctors. And by the way, I sent a little thing out there saying 62% of our fans are male, 37% are female, which leaves 1% that are
somewhere in between.
Other, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever. But more importantly, we need more female fans. I mean, guys, I love you, but...
it's pretty lopsided.
Yeah. For ego purposes, I'd like to have more female fans.
Yeah.
Just how I roll.
That's how you roll.
Or if you're in the Twitterverse, or on Twitter, my handle is TheDataDoc. And that's another way that you can keep up to speed with whether I just picked up my dry cleaning or got a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's all information and things that I think are interesting. Mostly tech, but sometimes, you know, beyond that, if that's of value there. So, Rick.
Yo.
You have a 2.5-year-old HP laptop.
That's it.
And despite your best efforts, no matter what you do, you cannot burn CDs.
Correct. Now, that was the first time I tried to download a picture or anything from it. I followed all the prompts. It looked like it was going to do it, and it continued to tell me that there was no CD in the tray.
And by goodness, there is.
And there is.
And you don't have it in upside down.
Which way's up?
Label side up.
That's it.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.
That works.
The discs that you're using, are they CDR or CDRW?
CDR.
CDR, okay. So based on what your symptoms are, what you're telling me, it sounds like the CD-ROM drive itself, either the lens, the little laser lens that allows it to read things, is clogged up, clouded over, got dirty. I don't know if you have cigarettes, pet dander, lots of dust, that kind of thing. Those can all build up on a drive over time. Is this something that you rarely use?
Well, when I bought it and drove it around the country with me.
No, I'm saying that the CD-ROM drive itself, you don't really use it that often?
No.
Okay, so then that also would add to my suspicion that you've got an issue of maybe buildup and grime. Or because it's a portable computer, the laser itself, if it took a good bump, especially if it was trying to access while it got bumped, you can knock those things out of alignment. And once that happens, you're basically, there's no easy way to realign those because there's such really tight tolerances in there. You're looking at a new drive.
Okay.
Most likely, based on your symptoms, it's either dirty, which you can get these little kits. You can go to the office supply store and get these little cleaner kits to try to clean the lens. And if that doesn't work, then it's probably the drive itself is malfunctioned, gone south for the winter permanently.
Oh, well, that's okay. I've got a 19,000-pound truck. I know how to handle it.
Woohoo! Just make sure you clean up your mess.
Yes.
All right, Rick.
Thank you so much, man.
You bet. Good luck. And that's going to wrap it up here. It is the Computer Corner once again. We'll see you all next week when we talk about whatever we talk about. Kevin, thanks.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Internet. Happy Halloween. Folks, please, please drive extra slow. Turn the lights on. Don't drive around with those masks on. And if you're going to eat dark chocolate, I suggest a Malbec. I'm going to get the wine flu tonight. We'll see you all next week. It's the Data Doctor signing out on the Computer Corner.